This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We want to take stock this hour of Saturday's rally on Boston Common.
Nazi scum, off our streets! Nazi scum, off our streets!
One thing I want to emphasize is that if there are any legitimate white supremacist groups like the KKK, Identity Europa, Vanguard, things like that, stay the hell away from our rally.
The fundamental objective is to make sure everybody comes out safe while protecting people's First Amendment right to peacefully congregate in a public square.
Some say the rally, which organizers called a free speech rally, was anything but, because participants and the media were kept away and no one could even hear the rally. But others say the event, where tens of thousands of counter-protesters overwhelmed what appeared to be fewer than 75 rally-goers, shows that Boston joined forces to stand against hate. We have a lineup of guests to talk about this hour. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Were you at Saturday's rally? What do you make of how the event was handled? Was it successful or was it a trampling of free speech rights? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can send us a tweet as well at Radio Boston. We're going to start with some of the reporters who were at Saturday's rally. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, Jack Lepiarz, and Zeninjor Enwemeka are with us in studio. Bruce, let's start with you. You were on the Common Saturday. The rally was scheduled to start at noon and continue until 2. What happened?
Well, I got to the Common about 10 o'clock, and I was surprised there weren't very many people there. I went straight to the Parkman bandstand, and it was surrounded by barricades, which wasn't surprising. We had been told the day before at a press conference with Police Commissioner Bill Evans that there would be barricades up there.
We put the barriers in different places to keep the crowd apart from each other. And inside that barrier line, we'll have plenty of officers to make sure that both sides don't get at each other. And this isn't anything new for us.
It was new for me, Deb, because I couldn't believe how far back we were.
Right. And you weren't allowed to go near the bandstand. Did you try to get in, particularly when it was about noontime and the rally was going to start?
Well, I tried many times, but we had been told. We got a restrictions letter restricting our access. It says, quote, no media personnel will be allowed inside the barricaded area around the bandstand. I was about 200 feet from the bandstand. I could hardly see the bandstand inside, let alone here. So it was really restricted our access.
So how then did you know when the rally had ended? What was happening on the bandstand and what time was that?
I know precisely. It was 12:46 because I was just tweeting out something and all of a sudden I looked up and there was nobody in the bandstand. I was astonished. I thought, am I hallucinating? They were gone. So according to my tweet, it was 12:46. Hmm.
And did you talk with anyone after that in official capacity about where folks were going?
No, I had tried mightily to get the attention of the police that were inside the kind of the barricaded area. They ignored me, and so I didn't get in.
So the rally lasted really less than an hour.
Oh, for sure. 46 minutes, less than that.
A couple of people speaking on the bandstand.
How would I know? I couldn't even hear them. I had no idea what was going on, let alone be able to report on it.
Okay. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. Now we want to go to WBUR's Jack Lepiarz, also on Boston Common Saturday. Jack, you were watching as police escorted rally organizers away from the Common onto Boylston Street. And let's listen to some of the counter-protesters who tried to stop the police vehicles.
Make them walk! Make them walk! Make them walk! Make them walk!
Jack, can you describe what was happening in that scene and roughly what time on Saturday that was happening?
Yeah, this was about 1:15. It was between the 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock hour that this all really happened. And what you had is you had 4 or 5 police riot vans in which the free speech ralliers were inside trying to get away from this scene. And you had an absolute sea of counter demonstrators there. As you heard, telling police to let them walk. In front of all 4 of the riot vans were a group of riot police, maybe about 3 dozen, both from Boston police and from state police, essentially holding, they had not nightsticks, but straight clubs, pushing crowds back because crowds were standing in front of the police riot vans, all with their hands up, saying, no, we don't want you to take them out in an escorted vehicle. We want you to make them walk. Let them walk through this crowd. Eventually, what started happening is police, in an effort to get these vans out of here, for about 15 minutes, the vans went maybe a quarter of a block, half a block. They started pushing the crowd back. Now, what that started was the crowd started pushing back. And
against the officers.
Against the officers. Overall, I didn't see any punches thrown. I didn't see anything like that, but definitely some heavy shoving back and forth. A couple protesters pushed up against vehicles on the side of the street.
Did it feel dangerous?
It never felt, you know, I never felt like I was truly in danger, and I was about 10 feet away from this line. There were moments where things definitely, the adrenaline sort of spiked. What eventually happened was, you know, police pushed protesters back about a block, maybe a block and a half. This took maybe 20 minutes. And eventually, what they appeared to try to do was essentially punch a hole through the line of protesters, push them all out of the way so that the vans could get out of the area. And what I saw there was I saw people being pushed to the side. I saw one news reporter, news photographer rather, get pushed to the ground by a group of riot police, and he almost looked like he got knocked out because he had to be dragged to the sidewalk by police. At that point, once the road was clear, the vans took off.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you climb a tree, Jack?
I did.
Tell us.
I was trying to get a sense of exactly how big this crowd was, and I, you know, was looking around. I saw probably 20 people in various trees, and I said, well, if they're going to do it, I'm going to do it too and get a better view.
But did you, I'm wondering though, in all seriousness, at any time, did you get any word from officials about what was going on?
Not really. It was interesting. I actually saw Police Commissioner Evans in front of the riot police line trying to disperse the crowd, trying to get them to move aside. That was not working.
Okay. Also with us in the studio, as we said, is WBUR's Aninjar Enwemeka. She was with the counter-protesters who marched from the Reggie Lewis Center to Boston Common on Saturday, and also at the press conference after the rallies. And Indra, tell us first off about the march to the Common. What was the mood like then?
So the mood there, it was mostly peaceful. I would say even festive. There was a full band that was playing music throughout the entire march from the Reggie Lewis Center to the Boston Common. I met a woman from Jamaica Plain who had a huge basket of flowers that she was handing out to people. And I would say there was a really wide range who showed up for this counter demonstration.
When did you get to the Common?
So the group that I was with, again, it was tens of thousands of people. We got to the Boston Common around 1 p.m. And again, that group started early in the morning. They started rallying around 10 a.m. The march itself began around 11:30. So we got to the Boston Common by 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm. And then once you got there, what did it feel like once you got there?
So once I got to the Common, I immediately noticed the heavy police presence along the Common. And I saw police officers lined up. I later saw police in riot gear. I saw officers moving in various ways to sort of keep the group separate, the counter-protesters and some of the folks who had showed up to attend the free speech rally. And at this point, once the counter-protests got to the Boston Common, people sort of fanned out in different directions. And at this point, I basically started moving around the Common just to see where the counter-protesters were going. And I noticed several sort of confrontations between the counter-protesters and folks who had shown up for the free speech rally. Arguments, mostly verbal arguments that I noticed.
And then you went to the press conference after the rally, after things had died down a little bit, and that was where city officials came out, the mayor, Mayor Walsh, and Police Commissioner Bill Evans. What did they say?
Yeah, well, Mayor Walsh mainly thanked everyone for expressing themselves positively. He said that Boston stood for peace and love, not bigotry and hate. And Commissioner Evans gave a rundown of what he said was a pretty smooth day overall. Again, it was mostly peaceful. Commissioner Evans did note that there were some arrests, but there had been no significant property damage or injuries. But I think what was most interesting during that press conference was when I asked Commissioner Bill Evans about the free speech rally organizers' claim that their program was prematurely shut down. Evans said no, that they had agreed, as Jack described earlier, that they had agreed to escort the organizers out. And then I asked him a follow-up question. I asked Commissioner Evans about the free speech rally's claim that their people were blocked, that people couldn't even get in to attend and listen to this rally. And here's what Commissioner Evans said.
We had a job to do. We did a great job. I'm not going to listen to people who come in here and want to talk about hate. And you know what? If they didn't get in, it's a good thing because their message isn't what we want to hear.
Yeah, so a very interesting statement, I think, from the police commissioner.
It makes you wonder why they had the permit in the first place, almost.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk about that throughout the hour. And you didn't climb any trees in Ninja.
I did not climb any trees. I stayed on the ground.
All right. WBUR's Ninja and Wemeca, Jack Lepiar's Bruce Gellerman, all of whom covered Saturday's rally on Boston Common. Thanks to all of you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Sure thing.
And stay with us. Coming up, we'll hear from both the leaders of Saturday's rally and a leader of the counter-protests. We're also taking your calls this hour, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Deborah Becker, leaving you with more sounds of demonstrators and a peace horn from Saturday's rally on Boston Common. This is Radio Boston.
We are
No.
You go philosophize later. Get a job, will you?
I do. We all have jobs.
It's Saturday.
Some of us are veterans.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We're talking about free speech this hour and Saturday's rally on Boston Common. That rally raised a lot of questions. Was free speech silenced because the organizers were so far removed from the crowd that they couldn't be heard? Or did Boston stand up to hate? We're joined in studio now by John Medlar. He's co-director of the New Free Speech Movement. He was the group that organized the free speech rally on Saturday. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me back.
Also with us is Monica Cannon. She's a Roxbury activist with the group Resist Supremacy. She was one of the co-organizers of Saturday's counter-protests. Welcome back to Radio Boston to you as well, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to also remind you that we are taking your calls. Were you at Saturday's rally? And what do you make of how the event was handled? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. John, I want to start with you. It's been a few days since the rally. Hopefully you had a little bit of time to process what happened. So how do you think it turned out?
Well, it wasn't the rally that we had envisioned, but I think it essentially made our point. Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, called it the most successful free speech rally of all time, in a way, because it was a small group of people basically got together and said, hey, we don't think there's enough free speech in this country, and we'd like some. And then a massive amount of people showed up to stop it. Now, of course, we respect, and in fact, we rally for their right to assemble and speak freely as well. And if they had any objections to any of our speakers, then of course they have the right to counter-protest. We fully encourage that. I just wish that people had the opportunity to really, you know, listen to what our speakers had to say and then make their own judgments rather. And I feel like they were unfortunately denied that opportunity. I feel like it's hard to really like label. Yes, I feel like, you know, we heard Commissioner Evans' statements earlier, and I feel like that's a bit weird for him to say in sort of an absolute fashion that, you know, oh, our speakers had a message of hate where he didn't even get the chance to listen.
Hmm. And Monica, I want you to respond to that a little bit as well, too. I mean, you know, was it premature to judge folks without hearing them Saturday and shutting them out, essentially?
So, no, I'm going to be candid and say that if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, Aflac. Most of the speakers that, actually all of the speakers that were on their program, one of them, Kyle Chapman, the moment you Google his name, it says white nationalist. It's the same thing with Joe Biggs. It was the same thing with Alex Jones. They all stand for hatred and white supremacy, neo-Nazi ideology and racism. So, no, it wasn't premature. It's actually based off of real, actual facts.
I wouldn't say that just whatever you hear on Google is necessarily fact. There's a lot of fake news out
there. It goes beyond Google. It goes into everything that they talk about, everything that they stand for, everything that they've ever said on Alex on his radio show, everything they've ever expressed has been against my people.
Well, I've listened to them quite a bit, and I would completely disagree with that, unless you're somehow expanding the definition of white supremacy to include things that most people would not consider it to be.
It's self-explanatory.
Okay, the question here is when do we try to limit free speech in the name of public safety, which mm-hmm. was what was done on Saturday, and I want to hear from some of our callers as well. Kenny is calling from Andover. Kenny, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask the panel to see what they think about the fact that freedom of speech comes at a price. So if foreign or domestic terrorists should get a platform to be able to speak freely, like I guess the KKK or ISIS. Should they be allowed to speak as well?
So what you're saying then is there in fact do need to be limits on free speech because there are some extremists out there that need to be curtailed. Is that right, Kenny?
Exactly, yeah, especially extremists like the KKK that wish for the ethnic cleansing, which is what I've heard on the news. So, I mean, that sounds extreme and violent to me, just as violent as ISIS, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kenny, thanks so much for the call. I'm wondering what you say to that, John Medlar, one of the organizers of Saturday's rally. But where do you draw the line, or is there no line at all when it comes to this type of thing? Do you let someone who's an avowed terrorist speak to people or not?
I draw the line at the point where speech crosses over into action. So if someone makes a credible threat, that is something that you can that or directly incites people to, you know, commit violent acts and commit criminal acts against other people. That is something that you can prosecute for. We already have, you know, precedent for that. And so I don't think that that is necessarily I don't think that is necessarily the issue, especially because I don't think that we're anywhere near that point yet, particularly with the people that we had on our panel.
I want to just talk a little bit about exactly what happened on Saturday, because I think it kind of took everybody a bit by surprise, and I'm not sure if it did for you as well. Media got there, and yes, media were told that there would be some restrictions, but they were so far away, they couldn't hear anything. Mayor Walsh has said that there was supposed to be a PA system that wasn't there, that these restrictions were well advertised in advance, and then said that your folks, you as a rally organizer and some of the folks that worked with you, decided to end the speeches early and leave, and you were escorted out by police. Did you know all of that in advance?
Well, we didn't know precisely how far away that people would be kept apart. We were, you know, assured that the people coming to attend our rally would be kept at a safe distance from the people that came to counter-protest. Unfortunately, I think there might have been some miscommunications because we did want the press in there. Maybe not, you know, with us in the bandstand itself, but we certainly wanted them to be close enough, as close as the audience. Many of our audience members were prevented from getting inside as well. And so I think that, you know, there might have been some miscommunications as to exactly how those proposed restrictions would be applied. And which is, I think, is unfortunate. And we've definitely learned a lot from this process, and we're going to take it forward. And as far as you mentioned the PA system, we were planning on bringing a battery operated PA system. We did have a number of megaphones that proved to be woefully insufficient. So that's another thing that we're going to have to rectify for next time.
So was part of the fault here your sound system?
Well, part of the fault here, I think, rests on, like I said, there are miscommunications. We would have prepared differently if we knew precisely how the police would have been implementing those proposed restrictions. You also, I believe you also mentioned, and I forgot to mention this at first, the police supposedly said that it was our decision to end the rally early. That was not the case. We were told that the police could not guarantee our safety and we had to be evacuated. That is my understanding.
Oh, and then it was determined that the police would escort you out of the comment.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Monica, if you might tell us, some of the speeches that were happening on the bandstand were broadcast on social media, even though folks could not hear them or access them at the rally. I wonder, did you listen to any of those? Or
no, not at all. Wasn't interested in listening to them.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone who would say, well, how do you know exactly what the speech entailed if you didn't listen to it?
So again, from all the advertisement, the flyer that specifically targeted racist individuals, Trump supporters, we've watched on the media time and time again that most of the people, if not all of the people who have supported Donald Trump, have engaged in racist activity. We watch people of color be beaten at rallies. We watch what happened in Charlottesville. Free speech, I think, is just a mass name for racism and white supremacy. In Charlottesville, we watch people be beaten. We watch a woman lose her life, a car drive through a crowd of people because people were standing up against that hatred. And another thing I would like to say is that people of color, black people, queer, femme, LGBTQ community stand up and have free speech and protest nonviolently on a regular basis and are killed, maimed, and tormented in this country.
Mm-hmm. But again, is it the slippery slope of saying,
no,
you can't talk if I don't agree with you?
No, it's not a slippery slope. It's hate speech, right? And that's what it needs to be labeled as. Black people don't have the privilege of having free speech in this country, not even in the city of Boston. So let's be clear that you can't have free speech to cater to one side and not the other. It's never been equal playing ground. It's not now, nor have it ever been. And to give the assumption that they were standing up for free speech because in some way, shape or form that was taken away from them is also an untruth, because white supremacy is in everything in this country, from the government to elected officials and everything that we see on a regular basis. So they've never been disenfranchised at any time.
But isn't the idea of free speech, we may not have it, but isn't it something that aren't these the ideals that we all agree we should be working toward?
Well, absolutely. But if we're going to work towards it, we should have been working towards it a long time ago. We have legislation on the books right now that doesn't even guarantee that people of color will still have the right to vote. We have to vote to be able to have the right to vote in this country. So if we're gonna make sure that that's the ideal, then we have some fixing to do. We have to go back and fix a lot of this systematic racism and all these things that are still in play against people of color.
I want to get to some of our calls here. Jeff is calling from Stowe. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. My name's Jeff. I'm 62 years old. I've been around long enough to see some things happen in this country. I'm pretty left-wing in my thinking, and I went into Boston to denounce the coalition on Saturday. But that's not what happened. Instead, Bostonians silenced the coalition as they were escorted out by the police.
So you went in. Why did you go in again, Jeff? Explain that to me, to denounce the coalition.
I went in as a kind of protester to denounce the coalition's message. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't able to happen because those people were escorted away by the police before they had a chance to even talk. And I just think it was a sad testament to Boston, which we consider the cradle of liberty. Mm. You know, silencing the coalition may have been the intent of many of the people in there, but it wasn't mine. It was to go in and denounce what they had to say. But I wasn't in there to silence them, and I think they were entitled to that.
All right. All right, Jeff, thanks for the call. I want to hear from others. Do you feel that free speech rights were, in fact, violated here and because we're picking and choosing exactly who can talk? I want to go now to another caller. Jack is calling from Jamaica Plain. Jack, you're on the air.
Yeah, first-time caller. I was there at the march. I thought it was a astounding success. I completely disagree with your last caller. Everyone came out, and everyone gave a piece of their mind. 40,000 people came out and used freedom of speech. And you know what? Freedom of speech doesn't mean people don't have to listen. You know, I didn't get a PA system. I didn't get a gazebo. I had to have a piece of cardboard and a Sharpie. These guys should be considered themselves lucky. And my tax dollars paid for them to talk, okay? You know, they're lucky. Mm-hmm. They're lucky they didn't get killed.
Jack, I think the problem here is that you can't pick and choose who is the one who can speak. And John Medlar, what would you say? What would you say to Jack?
We've been picking and choosing in this country.
Well, Jack
forever.
Does have every. Well, Jack, you know, there's nothing stopping him from getting a permit and having his own rally. So I think that that's a little bit of a false equivalency. But I'm glad that he did get the opportunity to, you know, march and have his sign and express himself. I do, and I do agree with Monica that I do think that, you know, free speech rights should apply to everybody. That should be the ideal. And if there are still laws on the books that are discriminatory, then we need to look at that.
You know, I want to talk about what was happening at the demonstration that day in regards to this movement known as Antifa, because there's been a lot of talk about this. And these are folks who are shown at a lot of demonstrations with their faces covered, typically with bandanas. They're dressed in black, sometimes sunglasses. But basically, their identity is concealed. And there was concern that they might incite violence. Mm-hmm. They are among the counter protesters there. And actually, WBUR spoke with some folks who said that they did align themselves with Antifa. It's not necessarily an organized group, but they were there to support the message that's similar to Antifa. And I'd like to listen to what they had to say.
I did not come here to pick a fight. I came here to make sure that people that follow the same message that I'm following stay safe, and if for whatever reason violence were to break out, to make sure that those same people that I'm sharing the message with are not getting hurt.
So, Monica Cannon, I'm wondering, what do we know about Antifa and its role Saturday? Certainly there were clusters of folks there dressed in such a way that might lead folks to believe that they are aligned with the Antifa movement. But and we know from the New York Times reporting from folks who have identified themselves as involved with Antifa that they do sometimes say that violence is justified. But and I know it's hard to generalize when you don't actually have a group, but mm-hmm. what would you say is the message of Antifa in the role here?
So I can't speak on the message of Antifa. I can only tell you the role they played Saturday. And the mm-hmm. role that they played was protection, right? They made sure that everyone was safe. They stood out there and supported what we were doing. And when it was time for us to escort, they made sure that we escorted off the commons in a safe way and made sure that everybody that was with the fight supremacist movement was protected. And that was the role that they played in regards to what they stand for and all that stuff. I let Antifa defend themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do they, would you say, agree that sometimes violence is justified?
Yes, in certain instances, I believe that they do agree that that is the mantra.
To achieve your ends or to defend yourself?
To defend yourself, I believe.
Not to achieve your ends necessarily.
Not my opinion. This is my opinion, not mm-hmm. to, no.
Okay. John Medlar, I'm wondering, you know, we heard from our reporters at the start of the show about sort of the timeline of mm-hmm. the events on the Common. And I'm wondering if you thought, we heard from Bruce Gellerman, who said it seemed as if things wrapped up around quarter of one. Around 1 o'clock, the counter demonstrators arrived after the march from the Reggie Lewis Center to the Boston Common. And then at about 1:15, you were being escorted out through with police vehicles onto Boylston Street. Was there, and maybe you don't know the answer to this question, we should say we did invite the mayor and the Boston Police Commissioner on the show today, but they weren't able to make it, apparently. But was there almost a strategy to make sure that you were out of there before all the marchers came from the Reggie Lewis Center?
There definitely was. No, the police, as far as keeping us safe, were very professional in that respect, and they did their jobs excellently. I would think that they took a bit, were a bit excessive in that, and which the result of that is that essentially we didn't have an audience. Many of the people that came to listen were not allowed into the venue. The press were not allowed into the venue, which I think was an oversight in a way. But yes, as far as keeping us safe and then I think they did a good job of that. As far as Antifa is concerned, they have a very strange definition of self-defense. They basically, and anyone that they disagree with, they think is essentially a Nazi waiting to happen. And so they feel like a preemptive assault on such an individual would constitute self-defense. So I think that I think you'd be well served to examine their statements and their actions more carefully. One of our organizers who was trying to get into the rally was jumped and assaulted by Antifa, and he had to
flee. We can examine Antifa, but we can't examine your statements and your actions? That's contradictory. I mean, we should really look at their statements and their actions. So then
absolutely.
What is the difference with you and your organization and what you stand for? Because when I look at your statement and
you
your actions.
Earlier you said you don't listen to what
hold
we
on,
say. You have no time for
so,
what we
so
say.
So let me
you
say something to you.
Our
I know what you stand for. So we're not supposed to look at your statement and your actions, but we're supposed to investigate Antifa. That's contradictory.
You think you know what we stand for, but you said for yourself you have no time to listen.
Listen, I know exactly what you stand for.
You think,
and it's hatred against people of color, indigenous people, and the Jewish community, and that's what you stand for. That's what you represent,
John.
I don't stand for hatred against anybody. I want everyone in this country to have the same rights.
I hear you. It doesn't align with what you stand for, but I hear you.
What if there was another rally? Would you guys work together?
No.
I'd be open to it, but you already heard her answer.
No. Mm-mm.
No.
No. Not at all. No shape, form, or fashion.
Okay.
Because I want to be real clear and say this. People of color, indigenous people, have been marching peacefully, have been compromising for years, decades, right? Enough is enough. We're not tolerating it, right? We're not going to keep watching our people be murdered, killed. We're not going to watch the discriminatory actions. We're not going to listen to people talk about free speech, but we know that people of color don't have those same allotments allowed to them. We're not going to keep listening to all the stuff that they keep saying that is an untruth and then sit down with you and try to work with you, wherein you guys don't stand up when it's a person of color on the receiving end. When Philando Castro was murdered, he had a license to carry. He let the police know exactly what was happening. He put his hands up and notified them of everything that was happening so that he could prevent his life from being taken, and was shot and killed on camera, and still no one is suffering behind that murder. So when you say free speech to me, I think about, okay, so then that needs to apply for Black people, Black women specifically, queer people, LGBTQ, Jewish community. That has to go across the board. You can't pick and choose when we have free speech. And if that's the case, then I'm going to let you know that we're going to resist. So I have no interest in talking to him, working with his organization, or sitting down with them, because what they say and what they do does not align. And that is the mantra that this country has stood on for the last 1,000 years.
But I wonder, when emotions are this raw, for both of you, really, there has to be some way to find a middle ground, or the divisions just get deeper, don't they?
Well, this is one thing that I say to the alt-right, for example, all the time. You can't allow yourself to resent other groups. People like that really
welcome
is
to being Black in America.
Well, that's, you know, everyone has the resentments, and I think that it's ultimately poisonous to the individual. I think that one of the ways that people can really improve their situations in this country, regardless of race, is to really get their own lives together with in any capacity that they can, rather than waiting for, say, something like the government to come and save them.
Oh, I'm not waiting for the government to save us, which is why you've seen 40,000 people show up at this counter-protest. We're not waiting for anybody anymore. We're showing up, and we're going to show the power of people, and we're going to change everything that's happening systematically against people of color, because we're not waiting for you and nobody else.
I want to take another call before the break. Nancy is on the line from Framingham. Nancy, you're on the air.
Yes, Mayor Walsh kept his word. He said if there's any threat of funny business, it's up to the listener to determine what that is. The whole thing would be called off. It was called off Friday until Saturday morning until about 11 a.m. When the whole thing was called off. I feared funny business as I feared uncivil violence after Martin Luther King was murdered.
So you feel that even though it was called off, that it wasn't necessarily a curtailment of anyone's rights. What it was an effort to protect public safety.
Overall, okay. Yes, across the board.
All right, Nancy, thank you very much for the call. Last question, John Medlar. At the beginning, you said you're going to take this forward. What does that mean?
That means that we're going to have more events. We're going to learn from what we went through in this process. We're going to make improvements. That's exactly what we mean. We're going to take this forward.
Okay.
And expect the resistance every time.
Well, you know, as I said, we respect your right to freely assemble as well.
All right. I want to thank both of you for being in, particularly together. We should say this was kind of a last-minute decision. You both handled it very well, and maybe someday there will be common ground, but we don't know at this point. Monica Cannon, the Roxbury activist with the group Resist Supremacy and one of the co-organizers of Saturday's counter-protest. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Also, John Medlar, co-director of the New Free Speech Movement, one of the organizers of Saturday's rally on Boston Common. John, thank you.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, the ACLU weighs in on the First Amendment and free speech protections after Saturday's rally. Also, we'll take more of your calls at 800-423-8255. We want to know, were you there? Are you proud of the way Boston handled the rally, or do you think city officials violated people's constitutional rights to free speech?
No Trump! No KKK! No fascist USA! No Trump! No KKK!
I'm Deborah Becker. Stay with us. This is Radio Boston.
No KKK, no fascist USA. No Trump. No KKK, no fascist USA. No Trump.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We're continuing our look today at last weekend's so-called free speech rally in the heart of Boston. Some legal analysts are concerned that the media prohibited from the bandstand where the speeches were delivered and with no way to really hear the rally. What part of the speech was free? Here's Peter Caruso. He's a media attorney based in Andover.
I never in my entire history representing the media have I had journalists placed 40 or 50 yards away from a speaker. in a public forum on public property when they are speaking their rights under the First Amendment. I believe that the mayor acts shamefully.
Listeners, we're asking you, were you there on Saturday? What do you make of the way the event was handled? Was it successful or was it a trampling of free speech rights? Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. On the line with us right now is Matt Siegel. He's legal director of the Massachusetts chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Matt, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So from your perspective, which I'm assuming is the perspective of the ACLU, what worked and what didn't Saturday?
Well, first things first, the most important thing that happened, which would be in the category of things that worked, is that thanks to organizers like your last guest, Monica Cannon, thousands of people, including many ACLU of Massachusetts, staff members and supporters, gathered in Boston to make a powerful statement against white supremacy, against racism, and against hate. That worked, and it was incredible. And it's to the credit of the organizers. As far as what didn't work, I think some of the First Amendment concerns that your journalist guests have raised are really important. You know, given the crowds that were in Boston on Saturday and in light of the just sickening violence that had occurred in Charlottesville, it was understandable for the city and the police department to create some physical separation between the groups that had sought to express themselves. But public safety is not a license for cities and police departments to favor certain people or viewpoints, because that's directly contrary to the First Amendment. And we now have some evidence that this unconstitutional preferential treatment did occur.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, if in fact the media were warned ahead of time, as our reporter, WBUR reporter Bruce Gellerman pointed out, that the media did know ahead of time that they were going to be restricted from even hearing any of these speeches, is that something that's typical, Matt? And when is that sort of okay?
Well, if your initial guests are reporting correctly what happened, and I have no reason to doubt that they are, then it doesn't sound okay. And here's the situation that was described by your guests, including Bruce Gellerman. It sounds like that while most people who attended on Saturday had a choice about whether to stand with the thousands of marchers or instead with those gathered on the Parkman bandstand, there was one group of people who didn't have that choice, and that was journalists. As it was, we understand it, they were just prohibited from entering the barricaded area. And to your question about notice, there was sort of a buried line in a PDF document suggesting that journalists wouldn't be permitted to enter the barricaded area. But I'm not sure anyone in the world knew in advance that that barricade would be, as Bruce Gellerman described it, as large as 200 feet across, in size. So it's not clear that anyone knew in advance the extent to which journalists would be barred. Mm-hmm. And that is especially concerning when you consider that it was bookended by certain statements by public officials. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, the mayor had suggested before the events of Saturday that journalists should not cover the folks in the bandstand. And then as you played the clip from Commissioner Evans, after the rally, he was indicating that he was glad that they weren't hurt.
Right. He said it's a good thing because their message is not what we want to hear.
So if you put those statements together with how the rules were enforced, it looks like there may have been an effort to ensure that journalists could cover only the marchers, and not the folks at the bandstand. And that's why you get debates like you just had on this program, which is everyone debating about what the folks at the bandstand really meant or really intended, because there are no clips of that. There's no footage of that except by what the folks at the bandstand chose themselves to put on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, it was following Charlottesville. A young woman died. There was real concern on all sides here. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Tensions were unbelievably high. and emotions were raw, as we saw from the footage of what was happening with people yelling at each other and fighting. We've heard clips of it throughout our program today. Get a job. You know, you can't. I don't want to hear you. Shut up. I don't want to hear your point of view. I mean, with all of that going on, did officials have a responsibility, Matt, to protect public safety? And where do you draw that line? Because if they had allowed things to just sort of go, there could have been a real tragedy.
I'm not disputing that at all. In fact, you know, the ACLU, Massachusetts, we reached out to several folks in government before the events of Saturday because we were concerned about Charlottesville and we wanted to make sure that there wouldn't be a repeat of that violence. And we think that the events of Charlottesville may have been a reason to create a larger physical separation between groups than you would normally see. But even assuming for public safety purposes, a larger than usual buffer zone would have been okay on Saturday, it still wouldn't have been okay to put to disfavor journalists, to take steps affirmatively to ensure that the folks at the bandstand wouldn't be heard. You know, we're a really strong city here. The Boston Common is a bastion of First Amendment, and I'd like to think that the people of Boston, the tens of thousands of people who showed up, would have rejected the hateful messages, even if they had those hateful messages had been heard loud and clear.
Hmm. I want to go to a call here. We have some our lines are completely full, Matt. So let's bring some callers into the conversation. Jane is calling from Brookline. Jane, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. Just wanted to let everyone know, I tried to attend the rally on Saturday with my three children, two young adults, and one was slightly under age 18. And we were not allowed in. The people who were protesting wouldn't allow us to go in. The police, we were circumferencing the entire area trying to plead with the police to let us join the rally and, to no avail, basically. So, I'd say it was a one-sided rally, or I'd say one-sided protest. You know, no one really was allowed to listen to each other. Protesters were way away from the center, and the people in the rally were just unreachable.
All right. So you were not allowed in. Jane, thanks so much for the call. Another caller here, Billy Joe, is calling from Cambridge. Billy Joe, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of things to say. One is I'm super glad that no tragedy occurred, and I think that's the most important thing. We, like John Medler, said he wants to learn from this experience and go forward. I think we all needed to learn from Charlottesville and go forward and make sure that we could create a safe event. That's really important. And secondly, I want to stop calling it free speech when it's hate speech. And my friend and I have started reading the First Amendment, and it's my understanding that the First Amendment does not protect speech that incites violence. And when you're saying, can't we just get along and talk to each other, if somebody is saying to me, I don't believe you should live in this country, I want you to go and live in another country, I don't want blacks in this country, that to me is violence. That to me is hate speech. It's not free speech. And to want someone to be killed, to be annihilated, to want a whole race to be annihilated, that seems to me unprotected speech, okay, and according to our own laws.
Well, let's ask our ACLU representative who's on the line, Matt Siegel, who is with us. Matt, we heard from Jane, who said she was not allowed to attend the rally. We heard from Billy Joe, who says, what about the First Amendment? Does it not protect speech that incites violence? What are your answers to them?
Well, as to the first caller, to the extent that people were not able to get to where they wanted to go, it's hard for me to know what the real reason for that was. Obviously, there were tens of thousands of people in the streets, and I'm sure that some people just weren't able to get to where they were going. I wouldn't necessarily say that was some fault of a city or official or a police officer. As far as the question about hate speech, I just think it's really important to draw a distinction, as we do at the ACLU, between the speech we like and the speech that is permissible to say. The ACLU stands right with Monica Cannon and everyone else who is marching against white supremacy on Saturday. But it is quite dangerous to say that people who say the wrong thing in this country, even if it's wildly wrong, even if it's horrible, don't have a First Amendment right to say it, because then you're opening up the door to laws that could criminalize speech, putting people in jail for things that they say. And however wrong some people's views are, we generally don't want to open that door in this country.
Are you looking into the rally at all, taking any action possibly, Matt?
Well, the very first thing that we're doing is investigating. We're trying to hear from journalists about what exactly happened. We're also trying to understand from people who are arrested, you know, what they experienced. There has been a narrative put out there about the arrests, but we are hearing about people who may have been pepper sprayed, people who were arrested who feel that they shouldn't have been. So we just want to make sure that we understand what happened, because, as you said in the last segment, you know, there's going to be other rallies, particularly at the Boston Common, and we want to make sure that those rallies are safe, that people get to express themselves, and that the First Amendment is respected.
Okay. Matt Siegel, legal director of the Massachusetts chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.